Welcome into the show on this Thursday evening. It is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover. The K is for knowledge. Gover. Oh, woof.
I don't know a lot this week, Porth.
Sorry
to tell you.
Well, that was a rough one last night. The Preds lose game 4, 5-1. An opportunity to go up 3-1 in the series, and the Stars had all the desperation that you would expect out of a team down 2-1 in the series. And the Preds fall 5-1 last night. The series tied 2-2. The series coming back to Smashville Saturday afternoon. A matinee puck drop shortly after 2 o'clock. Pregame at 1. And last night, I'm telling you, that was difficult to watch. Especially once Dallas made it 4-0 and you knew it was pretty much over. Considering that they made it 4-0 just 14 minutes into regulation, into the first period, that one was difficult. And there are a lot of different ways we can go with this one. This is how I'll start this, Gover. Is yesterday I filled in for Jared Stillman on Jared and the GM, and Floyd Reese and I went through a lot of different keys for the Preds to come away with a Game 4 win. And essentially put the series away, right? I came up with two things that the Predators needed to do and play with. One, desperation. Two, discipline. And they did neither. And they seemed to have a lack of focus in that first period. It led to a barrage of penalties. They took four penalties in the first period, three of which ended up with power play goals for the Dallas Stars. And that was one of the most, I don't know, that was one of the worst periods of playoff hockey the Predators have ever played.
Matthias Ekholm at 3:01 for high sticking. Philip Forsberg at 4:31 for delay of game. And by the way, one of the flukiest delay of games I've seen. It wasn't like a chip off the glass went wrong. It was cross ice, tried to airmail to Victor Arvidsson, just got a little too much under it.
Yeah.
That was very odd. Kelly Yarncroak, 2 minutes for holding at 8:50. Matthias Ekholm, again, high sticking. His second high sticking of the period, by the way, at 12:03. Those are your four penalties that resulted in three Dallas Stars goals last night in the first period.
What was your takeaway? Not only from the first period, but the game. And I'm going to be honest, once they made it 4-0, and then especially 5-0, I didn't really care about shot attempts or shots on goal or how they dictated pace at 5-on-5 after that. I was just like, this is a lost cause. This game is over. And what happens in the last 30 minutes, just don't get hurt. Just come back to Nashville as full strength as possible for game 5.
Yeah, I had a similar outlook after the 5th goal. And I know that people are going to be like, what? Like, you waited until the 5th goal to be... But to me,
you were holding out hope.
No, I did not say that. I said it was possible. Look, Porth, we've watched this game for a long, long time. We've been around the game a long, long time. We have seen some crazy stuff happen in the playoffs, especially. Okay, so Dallas goes up 4-0 in the first period, and that's brutal, right? I mean, no, there's no question about it. But you still think, look, there's 40 minutes of hockey left. If they get one goal every 10 minutes at this point, at least there's overtime, and you kind of, you know, maybe takes them. There's just like, I'm not holding out hope, but you're thinking there is a chance for them to crawl back in this game.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
That's what I was telling you. Okay. Until the 5th goal. With 30 minutes gone in the game, Zuccarello scored. Zuccarello, right? Yeah, Zuccarello scored. No, sorry. Hintz scored. And that was it. That was the time where I was like, okay, game's over. No matter what happens the rest of the way out, we're not seeing a Miracle on Manchester here repeat, right? This is going to be it. And you're right. It's go out there, and your main goal is not to score. It's to not get hurt. That's the main goal from this point on in the game. So anyway, my takeaway, Porth, is just that it's very frustrating to watch a team this talented look like they're lost. Now, again, just in that one game, they had flashes of dominance in other games. They had long stretches in game 2 in particular where they looked really good most of the game. But in game 4 in particular, they looked like they just showed up because the league asked them and required them to.
game four of a playoff series is not the time to come out with the energy that is equivalent to a January game in Carolina.
Or a preseason game.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay. But well, come on.
They did not have near the intensity, the energy, the focus, or the desperation that the Dallas Stars came out with. That, to me, was a pretty big red flag. Pretty big red flag.
Okay. Red flag meaning what? Like, in your mind, what red flag to what?
A red flag that they didn't come out with, like, they came out with very little jump.
Right, but I'm saying, was it a red flag for a bad night? Because every team and every player goes through that. They rarely have them all on the same night, however. But was it a red flag because it was a bad night, or a red flag to the series? Was it a red flag to the...
I think it's a little bit of both.
All right.
So a lot of both. If you're asking me candidly.
That I am.
Game four of round one, you're up 2-1. And you come out like that. And you have that kind of focus that results in four penalties. I mean... Holy smokes.
Let's add some context to that too, okay? Because this is what a lot of us were talking about going into that game last night. Was your second round opponent, whoever it's going to be, St. Louis or Winnipeg, that series is going at least six. Probably seven, the way the series looks. But they're going to at least six. If you come back to Nashville up 3-1 and can close it out on Saturday, those are big ifs now, because you've only won two games, okay, but to this point of yesterday. But if that's possible, if you can come out there with the desperation you talked about and the relentlessness and all right, and all that, and you really put your game together and locked down defensively and focused on that, and then went up 3-1 in the series with a chance to close out the series on Saturday, you would have a built-in at least 3 or 4 days rest before the next series would start, which by the way, is going to be physical, no matter who it is. It's going to be brutal. So it was.
We're both at kind of a loss of words.
It was very just. We got an hour to fill, though.
We're supposed to talk for an hour, and we are at a loss of words.
That's how dumbfounding this loss is to me, is that I don't have an answer, except I hope. Here's what I hope it is. I hope it was a kick in the pants. I hope it is they showed up, and that's about. But all they seem to do, except for like three or four guys. So that they showed up, they played game four, they lost bad, and this team looks at themselves and was like, what the hell is going
on? Okay, so you say kick in the pants. I say, why do you always have to get a kick in the pants?
You shouldn't have to.
Why does this team always need a kick in the pants?
You shouldn't have to, Porth, but I'm saying that's what I'm hoping it is, because otherwise, it was worthless. To go into Dallas, when you have a chance to take a stronghold on the series, and... to perform in that way, the only positive that you can get, in my opinion, at least my knee-jerk reaction to, we haven't really thought this out. We haven't talked about this right before the show. So my knee-jerk reaction is you have to hope it lights a fire under them and it gets them to collectively kind of gather into one brain, basically, and go back out there and dominate like they can. It's not like this is a terrible team that's kind of riding this wave of, well, they got in the playoffs and, good luck, This is a good team with great players who deserve better. Pekka-Rinne deserved a better fate last night.
Oh, my goodness.
It was not his fault.
I said ad nauseum yesterday afternoon with Floyd Reese that the team owed Pekka-Rinne a better performance than they gave him in Game 3 in front of him. And they gave him a worse performance in those first 13 minutes and 45 seconds before he was pulled for Saros.
I'm not saying that this is what happened. I'm just... As an outsider who watched the game on his couch, I'm wondering if it wasn't a take-for-granted type mentality, right? Like, Rene's back there. He's a reigning Vezina Trophy winner. He stood on his head and went nuts in Game 3, single-handedly won in the game, right? You did the stats. Was it most high-danger shots allowed in, 10 years or something like that?
Of any game in the National Hockey League.
Right. So he won them the game. He won them Game 3, period, flat out. No question. Okay. So it's almost like they thought, oh, Pekka's got it. If we can go out and play Cavalier and Pekka will take care of it. Now, again, I'm not saying they consciously thought that. I'm just saying there's a human element to the fact that you have such a great goaltender behind you and you think we should beat this team. Again, we're a great team, right? And we got Pekka back there. We'll be fine. And then they realize quickly Dallas has got their head on straight. They don't. And all of a sudden it's 4-0 after the first period.
So, this is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover. If you want to jump in, We usually don't open the phones on Preds Insiders. We will open the phones tonight, 615-737-1025, if you want to jump in and weigh in. Who's to blame? What's to blame? Everything's on the table after what happened last night in Game 4, looking ahead to Saturday's Game 5. You said earlier this segment that you felt like the fifth goal of the game for the Stars by Roope Hintz to make it 5-0 was the backbreaker for you, right?
For me. For me, it was the there's no turning back now.
For me, the backbreaker of that game happened in the first period. I will tell you what that backbreaker was when we come back after this. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
It's a tight checking game out there. It's frustrating when you're geared up to win a hockey game, and you look up and it's 4-0 on the board with 5 minutes to go in the period. You know, it's you're battling back at that point, and the frustration is easy to let into the game. But the game was, for me, the game was going to be hard to chase down once it got to that point at 4-0 with the three power play goals.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Preds head coach Peter Laviolette last night after the game on whether or not he felt his team maybe lost composure. Jeremy K. Gover, Ryan Porth here, Preds Insiders, live from the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Game Studios. Gover, when I hear that clip last night and Peter Laviolette says he felt like at 4-0 it was difficult to chase the game. There, last segment, you said your backbreaking moment of last night's game was the 5-0 goal in the second period to essentially just put it away, end of story, it's over.
Right.
For me, the backbreaker for this Preds team, where I felt like it was going to be very difficult to come back and chase that game and make it interesting, happened early in the first period where the Stars hit you with a right to the chin with two power play goals, one by Roope Hintz, the other by Alexander Radulov, in a span of a little over a minute. And they came out and hit you with a sledgehammer. You had a power play opportunity less than a minute later when Alexander Radulov took a roughing penalty. You had a power play opportunity to A, stop the bleeding, and B, get back in the game and really soften the blow of what happened in those first 5 minutes, right? And the power play provided nothing, absolutely nothing. It didn't provide much of any pressure on Ben Bishop. It didn't provide any momentum. And immediately after that power play ended, Andrew Cogliano went down and capitalized on a rebound off a shot by Blake Como. The Stars went up 3-0. And to me, that was the backbreaker. That's when I said, this is not going to be the Preds night at all. That, yes, it's 3-0. Yes, we've seen teams in the past come back from 3-0 down. But that would require scoring 4 goals on Ben Bishop. And after the performance that he had in Game 3, 4 goals on Ben Bishop last night was going to take a lot to accomplish. So for me, the backbreaker was the Cogliano goal to make it 3-0. I thought that's when I said this game's over.
I think that's fair. And the game probably was over at that point. I mean, heck, Coach Laviolette is saying it's hard to chase the game down 4-0. And that's all true. There's nothing wrong with that. My issue was that I've seen crazier things happen, and when there was that much game left, it's like, all right, I mean, you know, just get a goal and see what happens. You know, you just never know, right? Again, it's not like there was 0-0 going into the third, and they scored 4 goals in the first 8 minutes of the third period. And you're like, well, okay, like, you know, that's it, hang it up, right? It was the first period, and so, you know, there's plenty of time left. Just chip away. You just never know what's going to happen. Might get a lucky bounce. Blah 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 blah. But I mean, certainly it would have helped to have that power play goal there for specifically right there, because it's not like just a power play goal where you need a power play goal just to stop that conversation. Now it would have stopped the conversation. You're right. It would have stopped the bleeding, as you said, and it would have really propelled you back into the game. You would have kind of quieted down the crowd a little bit too. So all that to say, to me, it was just that fifth goal that was like, all right, get out there and don't get hurt every shift. That's your new goal. Before it was like, well, you know, you never know. Go bust your tail and try to score and, you know, generate some chances. But once the fifth goal went in, that was it.
615-737-1025 if you want to call in and weigh in on last night's game four. The Preds lose 5-1 in Dallas. The series now tied 2-2 as it comes back to Nashville for game five on Saturday. Let's go to Sean in Brentwood. He has been waiting patiently. Sean, welcome into Preds Insiders.
Hey, thanks for taking the call, guys. I appreciate it. So the reason I was calling, obviously, you know, yesterday's game was disappointing. Naturally, I wasn't surprised because I believe the game before that, Dallas was very much the aggressor and we got lucky in some scenarios. But considering it's been like that the whole second half of the season, at what point do we look at Coach Laviolette and think, hey, there's a dynamic here that's not mixing in? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean, for the call. I'm not even close to being there yet with head coach Peter Laviolette. We are going to get to a list of who or what is to blame for what happened last night, and I would put the coaching staff on that list. And I know Peter Laviolette came out after the game and said that they were ready to play and that there were certain circumstances that led to what happened in terms of the penalties, the parade of penalties, taking four of them in the first period, and that kind of killed whatever they thought they may have had going on in the first couple minutes of that game. But at the end of the day, if you have a lack of focus that's leading to the penalties, I don't think you're ready to play. That's just me. That is purely my opinion. If you have a lack of focus that is leading to penalties, a lot of penalties, I don't think you're mentally ready to play. And the fact that they also didn't match that desperation that Dallas had, and I know that's difficult because they were in a different position. Down 1-2, you're up 2-1. Still, I thought last night was pretty alarming the way they came out in that first period.
I have a hard time getting there. I'll be very honest. I have a hard time getting to the let's look for another coach discussion. Admittedly, a lot of that is because he has taken the Predators to the playoffs all 5 years he's been here. Obviously got to the Stanley Cup Finals as well. But I have a hard time getting there just yet. To me, there's definitely blame to go around. There's no question about that. But I think to say that this is a coaching issue, I don't know if I can get there just yet.
So the word blame has been thrown around a lot today for a lot of people in this town. So who or what, in your mind, Gover, is most to blame for last night's Game 4 debacle?
I think as a collective, I would say I have one, and I have I would say the defense. Mattias Ekholm, who's been amazing, right? Like Norris Trophy consideration, maybe not finalist, but Norris Trophy conversation.
Most of the regular season,
yeah. It was not himself is the best way to say that.
He hasn't been himself all series. I mean, you look back to game two
was rough.
He took the interference and then an unsportsmanlike conduct.
Right? Yep, for yapping.
Right. Like that is irresponsible to do that in a playoff game. And Mattias Ekholm has not been the same Mattias Ekholm in this postseason series.
But remember, in that game too, he also had a devastating giveaway that led to a Stars goal as well. So it's not just the yapping right. And the penalty. His play on the ice was not stellar either.
Great point.
Now he made up for that with a great play in the third period, but that was an anomaly in that game, is my point. It wasn't the other way around, where usually he's so great. At least this season, right? That you're like, oh, he turned the puck over. Okay, you give him one, give him a pass. It was the opposite this time.
You bring up defense. You mentioned Mattias Ekholm. I think you also have to mention Ryan Ellis.
That's where I was going before I got on my Ekholm tangent. Yeah, it was Ellis and Ekholm in particular did not look themselves. Again, nice way to say that because they've earned that. I'm not going to sit here and trash them because they're great players that, for whatever reason, are struggling right now. They've earned that leeway, that equity, if you will. But I think Yossi's been good, but not his elite carry the play self. PK Subban, however, has been tremendous all series long. For as much crap as he got all during the regular season, he looks great. And let me tell you this too, Porth. When you have a rookie defenseman straight out of college, like we're not talking like last year college, we're talking about like 3 weeks ago college, who steps into the NHL and is a permanent fixture, it seems like, on the blue line in the third pair, and you have a veteran and Dan Hamhuis on the third pair. When you have Hamhuis and Fabbro in your lineup every night, and they are not a liability, and they are not the focus of attention on the defense, that is a bad thing for the rest of the defense.
The focus of attention in terms of concerns.
Right. Yeah, of course. You said that way better than I did. Yes.
The other individual that I would put on this list is Philip Forsberg. I mean, that delay of game penalty, I know it was kind of fluky, because that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little weird.
But you have to have better control. And you could tell the look on his face when the camera panned to him as they were making that call, the reps were, that he knew he screwed up. He knew it. And he also had zero shot attempts for the entire game.
That's amazing.
Zero shot attempts. Not shots on goal. Shot attempts.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So I look at that Jofa line and, you know, we can criticize Ekholm, we can criticize Ellis, we can criticize the power play to no end until the dogs come home and the moon and to back and wherever. The Jofa line right now, they only have 2 points this series. One, on the goal in the third period last night that meant nothing when Ryan Johansson got an assist. And Philip Forsberg, who scored a miraculous goal in game three, that wasn't with the Jofa line. It was a great individual play that Nick Bonino set up in the defensive zone, lobbing it down ice. Forsberg got it, made a great individual play. But the Jofa line overall, they're needing more production out of that trio.
Is that more of what Dallas is doing against them, how they're suffocating the top line, or is that more the top line struggling? Because I would make an argument that they're focusing so much attention on that top line of Arvidsson, Johansson, Forsberg, that the other lines, it's their time to get up, right? I mean, Austin Watson, Colton, people forget, Watson, Sissons, and Bonino won them that series against Colorado last year.
Jofa was pretty good in that series.
No, sure.
But Forsberg had some great goals.
But Austin Watson was a point-per-game player.
No,
I mean, I'm saying, like,
I agree.
Like, maybe it was just a surprise, but they, in my opinion, they really carried the water for the Predators last year in that first round. The Predators need somebody to step up and do that again, not name Rocco Grimaldi.
I would also throw the penalty kill in the mix. I mean, look, the penalty kill held up very well against the Stars in the first three games, only giving up one power play goal.
Well, they made up for it in the fourth game.
Oof. The penalty kill last night did not step up, and neither did the power play, like I mentioned in the first period.
The Predators' power play, for those who don't know, were second in the NHL in the playoffs. They were second in the NHL before last night. They are now eighth. That's how bad the penalty kill was last year, or last night.
615-737-1025 if you want to jump in and weigh in on this conversation about Game 4. Colin has been waiting patiently. Colin, welcome into Preds Insiders.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I think a big problem with the Preds is our forecheck has been awful. You know, if you're not forcing these guys to turn over the puck and make bad decisions, you're never going to score on a good team like Dallas. We just need more zone time. And I don't know if you guys see anywhere that they can improve there or not, but I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Colin. I think the biggest concern for me offensively is the fact that they're not generating anything consistently on offense. And we know the Stars are really good defensively. They've been one of the top defensive teams really all regular season long, especially since about the midway point of the regular season. But they aren't generating anything consistently or like living in the Stars' offensive zone. There are pockets of games where they've done that. The start of game three in Dallas where they were getting shots and waves. The start of game one where they completely dominated. And then for long stretches of time in game two, but still, Dallas is getting a lot more consistent ozone time than Nashville is.
The zone entry on the attack for Nashville has been suspect for the past couple months. Okay. But the forecheck in particular is a great point because for me, sometimes they have too many men in deep, and then other times there's just one guy because the rest of the line is so gassed they have to go off for a change because they've been pinned in their own zone, or the puck's gone down the ice and then back down the ice the other way, and they got to defend and then try to get it back, try to get that transition going back again. Those are tough minutes. I don't care if you're out there for 50 seconds. They may not seem not like a lot to you guys, but 50 seconds at that level is a ton of time when you're just constantly churning those legs. So to go up and down the ice two or three times, by the time you try to put pressure on their breakout, half your line, if not all of it's got to get, well, not even your line, just your grouping of five, half of that's got to go off the ice to get new legs on. And that allows them, of course, the opportunity then to counter.
This is Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover. Was last night game four, was that just one game or did it mean more than just one game? We'll get into that next. He's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show. Preds Insiders is brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry for all your dental needs. Visit KellyERice.com. Ryan Porth and Jeremy K. Gover live in the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Game Studios reacting to last night's Game 4 loss for the Preds on the road in Dallas by a score of 5-1. We will continue the reaction in a minute, but to update you on the score around the National Hockey League, the score, not the scores, because there's only one game going on right now. Carolina leads Washington 1-0 in the first period with about 6.5 minutes to go. So Carolina down 2-1 in the series after winning game 3 at home. What was it, 5-0? Where they completely dominated the Capitals.
The Washington fans probably felt a lot like Predators fans did today.
Valid point. Yeah. I think they only had like 15, 18 shots on net.
It was not good.
Peter Mrazek was like, who was it? What was her name in Mighty Ducks? Julie the Cat Gaffney or
something like that?
Yeah, just kind of moseying on, just, you know, kind of bored in the crease.
Mrazek had the concession guy bring him a hot chocolate while he's standing back there.
Then you've got Jets-Blues game 5 tonight. Big game in Winnipeg.
Looking forward to that one.
That starts an hour from now at 7:30, and then Vegas closing out San Jose tonight at 9 o'clock.
They are going to close them out.
San Jose is not winning tonight.
They're going back to Martin Jones, everybody.
Vegas is the most impressive team in the playoffs so far.
They are.
Mark Stone.
And by the way, for all those who argued with me that Mark Stone wasn't worth the trade value that I put out there on Twitter, just take a look at what he's doing in Vegas right now. Wow. That guy's a monster.
6 goals and 10 points in 4 games so far for Vegas, who lead the Sharks 3-1 in that series.
You think he's a difference maker? A
little bit. So, last night's game 4, Preds lose 5-1. For you, Gover, do you think that's just one game in a long playoff series between these two teams? Or do you have more concerns than just it being one game?
Okay. Let me start by saying this. At the end of the day, it is one game. Okay? It's one 60-minute game. They lost. It doesn't matter if it's 10-0 or 1-0 in like 4 overtimes. It all counts the same. That's on paper. Okay? The eye test tells me that this team may need to be shaken up. Not roster-wise. Don't take that out of context. What I mean is they need to have a good talk with themselves, look in the mirror, and bring it. Let this be proof that they need to bring it every single shift, every single guy, every single possible way that they can through the rest of the way, because they now understand, and they have it's a perfectly clear example. 24 hours ago, they got boat raced out of Dallas, effort-wise. So let that stand as a motivating factor the rest of the way. That's all I can say, Porth. I don't know what else to tell you.
I hear you. I just don't know how you can have a kick in the pants in the playoffs. And they had plenty of them last year in the playoffs.
It doesn't matter if you need it or not. If you do need it, when you're a dad, you'll understand this. Okay. Like, my kid shouldn't need, he's 6 now, but just go with me on this. If he was a teenager, he shouldn't need a kick in the pants to graduate high school. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But he might need one. Whatever, through discipline or whatever it is. So it doesn't matter what he shouldn't need. It just matters what he does need. The Predators may need this. I don't know why. Is it because they took Pekka-Rinne for granted? Is it because they thought that it would be easy? Is it because they think Dallas was never in the contention for the top 3 spots in the Central? Is it because they lit up Ben Bishop on a garbage night, you know, like in 2 soft goals? Whatever the case is, they might need a kick in the pants. I can't explain it, but they might.
So last night for me was one of the worst playoff showings in team history.
I find it very hard to argue that.
Game 7.
Short of maybe the Phoenix series.
Game 7. Well, can you pick out any game in that series? Someone else tweeted me that last night. Can you really pick out any game in that series that felt the same as last night? I mean, the series as a whole was a disappointment. I would 100% agree. But those games were close that they were losing. They were a little wacky at times, but they were close. They were at least scoring some goals. Like last night, they got run out of the building 13 minutes in. Last night felt like Game 7 in San Jose back in 2016.
That was rough. But it that felt was like exhaustion, though.
Game 5 Stanley Cup Final in Pittsburgh, where the Penguins came out and absolutely blitzed you. It's up there with those two for me in terms of complete no-shows.
Okay.
But why in the postseason?
Why is that a pattern then? That's the next question.
I don't know.
And look, I
don't have a great answer for the why.
Playing personnel has turned over definitely since that Arizona series. But, you know, coaching staff's turned over. I mean, everything's turned over.
The head coach is the same since 2016.
But not 12.
The core. And I hear you on the Phoenix series. I'm not thinking about any game, okay. Any singular game in the Phoenix series as one of the worst showings.
Okay, my
in
point, though,
history.
Is still, why is this a thing? Why do the Nashville Predators at some random point in the playoffs
not only lose, but lose horribly?
Yeah, and then, you know, are they fine the rest of the way? God, we all hope so. But,
right.
You know, why is it a thing? That's my question.
So, last night, the first period was a pretty major red flag to me. Like I said earlier in the show, how do you come out like that? How do you come out with that lack of focus where you commit all those penalties? Where you fall down 4-0 before you can really blink? That's unacceptable for a playoff game. You shouldn't have to have you shouldn't have to have a kick in the pants in the middle of the playoffs. For me, the concerns are more than just one game. If you are asking me honestly. Now, going into last night, I was like, look, they stole game three. Pecorine was awesome. This is a night where they need to bounce back and have a much better eyeball performance where you look at what they're doing and say they are playing a lot better than they did in game three. And they had a worse performance than they had in game three. And they can't generate much offense at all. Jeremy Roenick of NBC Sports would agree with that, who last night during one of the intermissions of the Colorado-Calgary game said as much, and on Jared and the GM yesterday called out really basically all the forwards of the Nashville Predators. And another thing, the more you watch this series, the more obvious it is that Dallas has more consistent compete from start to finish within games than Nashville. Like, game two aside, this has not been a pretty series on the ice for the Preds. Game one, they came out flying in the first period, then disappeared for 30 minutes. Game three, they came out flying in the first period, and then Pecorine had to hold on for dear life. Made 40 saves. It was a great, great, great performance by Pecorine. And then last night, you fall down 4-0 at the start of the game, 13 minutes in. Like, the fact that we have less concerns about the Dallas Stars and whether or not they're going to bring their A game than we have with the Nashville Predators, to me, is a pretty big concern.
You know what, Porth? You know how they can, honestly, how they can amend this? They can kind of take care of all this notion that's heading around right now? Is go out and win the series, whether it be in 7 games or 6. If they win the series, nobody's going to care what that one game looked like. Because you know why? Because it's a new season in the second round, and everyone starts 0-0 all over again. So I hate to be like Preds apologist or, you know, Captain Optimism or whatever, because you know me long enough. I very much am not. I tell you exactly what I think. But that's how you negate all of this. You literally can take it and say, okay, it was a one-night thing, or it was an anomaly, or maybe a two-night thing with Rene stealing us a game, whatever the case is. You do that by winning the series. If you can somehow find a way to win 2 more games... no one's going to give a crap what happened in Dallas in game 4.
No, but I think they have to show a lot more in games 5 and 6.
Oh, of course. They can't win.
Or 7.
Sure.
To win the series and get to round 2 for me to believe that they will absolutely beat St. Louis or Winnipeg in
round
2. Sure.
I do not discount that at all. I'm simply saying that if you're a fan and you're out there listening and you're thinking, man, is there any hope here? The answer is nobody's going to give a crap about game 4 and how it went if they win the series, no matter how they win it.
615-737-1025. If you want to jump in and weigh in, we'll get to some more of your calls. Plus, are Predators lineup changes necessary in game 5, either with lines or bodies in the lineup? We will get to all of that coming up next. He's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Preds Insiders rolling right along here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth joined by Jeremy K. Gover of thegamenashville.com and the Predators Radio Network, reacting to Game 4 last night. Preds drop it in Dallas 5-1. The series tied 2-2. Game 5 is Saturday, 2 p.m. puck drop, a special national TV matinee on NBC. Pregame will start at 1 o'clock. The official pregame will start at 1 o'clock on these airwaves. Preds Extra, myself, and Justin Bradford will be 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. live from Barrel House inside Bridgestone Arena. And then Chase McCabe will be on even before that at 9 a.m. So we will have a ton of pregame coverage starting at 9 a.m. on Saturday for Game 5, which starts shortly after 2 p.m. Saturday afternoon. Gover, I teased the question of are lineup changes necessary to Game 5, and we will get to that here in a couple minutes. But Chase has been waiting patiently on the line. We've been taking some of your calls reacting to Game 4. Chase, welcome into Preds Insiders. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. Just give me one.
Can you guys hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
All righty. So if we go back to, you know, Game 6 in the finals, I unfortunately had the courage to be at that game and suffer the loss. That was the game, obviously, before the 6-0, you know, just absolute destruction of our team. But if we go back to that, and, you know, we all know the one goal that the refs, you know, blew the whistle early, which would have gave us the easy 1-0 lead, and we could be playing a Game 7. And probably, you know, maybe even winning the Stanley Cup if things go a little different. And obviously, Hornquist's goal was one of the luckiest bounces in a Stanley Cup game ever. But we also got to keep in fact that it seems like every time we put Staros in, we seem to have like a oh-no moment. We're finally screwing up. And we look back at second and third period, we tied 1-1 in goals the rest of the game. Obviously, it was a late third period goal, too little too late. But at the end of the day, I really think that if we – I mean, they're 11th in power plays. Obviously, we got to eliminate the penalties. That's clear. It's one of those things where we were getting away with it, so we kept doing it. But I think if we eliminate penalties and start playing more desperate hockey like everyone's been saying, then I think we can come back and flip this series back around.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Chase. I don't really care that the Preds and Stars after the first period were tied 1-1 for the rest of that game. That doesn't do much for me. It was a lost cause 13 minutes and 45 seconds into the game last night.
You can make an argument that Dallas let their foot off the gas up 4-0, and therefore it was 1-1, and that's all great and
they
everything.
Just kicked their feet up and
right.
Cruised.
Just, again, don't get hurt. Go out there and don't get hurt. Right? That could have been their mentality too, just for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. And I do agree with him that you got to have a lot more desperation. You have to come out with your hair on fire Saturday because you know Dallas is going to bring their A game. That's the thing. Outside of little pockets here and there, Dallas has been bringing what we would probably say is their A game or close to it most of this series. You have to bring your A game Saturday.
We're going
to
learn.
No ifs, ands, or buts.
We're going to learn a lot about the Predators, this Predators team on Saturday, Porth.
Speaking of Game 5, tomorrow the team practices at Centennial Sportsplex. Wayne Simmonds and Brian Boyle could practice. Peter Laviolette said that today on a conference call. He didn't want to go as far to say that they would, but they could practice tomorrow. Both were announced as week to week as recently as Monday, the day of Game 3. Whether or not those two are in the lineup for Game 5, for you, Gover, do you feel any lineup changes are necessary for that pivotal Game 5 on Saturday?
The quick answer, Porth, is no. No roster changes at all as far as lineup goes. I'm not overly a Mika Salamaki fan. I think he's not been the same player since he got hurt a couple seasons ago. But is Freddie Gaudreau, who I'm a big fan of, but is he an upgrade over Mika Salamaki, right? That's the only question, really. Everybody else is in their place. Normally, this is where I'd say Rocco Grimaldi should go in the lineup, but he's been in the lineup. He's done great.
Mm-hmm.
His three games, he's done everything he can do in his three games.
Rocco's been one of the best players right. In this series for the Preds.
Right, and he missed game one. So, yeah. You know, he got sat during game one. So, look, the short answer is no. I think you have the best. I think if you're Coach Laviolette, you have the best possible lineup right now.
The 12 forwards.
Yes. Well, and obviously I'm not going to lobby for Hamus and Fabro coming out of the lineup, so that's
the defense
out of the question.
Is set. The right. Defense is set until further notice.
And don't even get me started on the Rene conversation. That's a bunch of garbage. He's the starter until kingdom come.
I wasn't even going
to
bring it up.
I know, but you mentioned the defense is not a question. I had to go ahead and put that in there because okay. If I don't say something, I'm going to get Twitter jacked later with how I failed to mention the goaltender. Maybe there's a controversy.
So if Boyle or Simmons...
I don't know what that voice was, by the way.
...is ready to go... if Boyle or Simmons is ready to go for Game 5 Saturday, I would think one of them is going in for Salamaki. If they practice if they're ready to go,
sure.
I would think Salamaki would be the odd man out coming out of the lineup. I think that's pretty clear. That's pretty obvious. For me, when I say lineup changes, I kind of also mean juggling the lines a little bit. Where
okay.
I would even consider if, and I don't know if I would start Game 5 this way, but if you're still struggling 5-on-5 to generate much pressure offensively, I would consider breaking up the Jofa line and trying to get Victor Arvidsson away from some of those better matchups for the Stars.
I can't.
Because Victor Arvidsson has been a pretty big non-factor in this series. And as well as that Jofa line has been playing, at some point, don't you have to try something else?
Yeah, but not on that line. We have seen, Porth, come on, man. We've seen several times where they've tried to be like, hey, let's get Forsberg going and put him down in the second line or put him in the third line. Or, hey, maybe Ryan Johansson can skate with this other line over here. It never works.
They put Arvidsson on the second line for like two games in February, and it got Kyle Turris going for two games.
Okay. But he's been on other lines and hasn't done anything.
What
now, if you want to play with something for a period and be like, okay, we're going to try this in the first period or the second, fine.
Like you did in the third period last night when it was already a lost cause.
Right, at that point, it's shuffle the eye line. but I'm just like, if you want to do that for a period, that's fine, okay? Or you want to change it to the power play combination, that's also fine. Cal Yarncroke hasn't done a whole lot. Why is Rocco Grimaldi not in the on the? I'm just spitting out ideas at this point. The point is that if you want to change something up, that's fine. The Jofa line, the top line is really, to me, is the only thing that consistently goes.
Again, I wouldn't start Game 5 that way. But if the Stars are up 1-0 or it's tied 1-1...
Then why would you break up your top line at that point? You would need them to then...
They have a combined 2 points in this series.
But they're consistently good all season. When they're together, there's no chemistry like that.
I hear you. I do.
That's a real desperation gamble. That's a Game 7, we're not getting anything going in the second period gamble. This team could be down 3-2 and still win two games in a row and win the series. It's not time for that. Now, look, I've been wrong about Coach Laviolette's decisions before, so I'm not going to sit here and say, you know.
If you're right and he does nothing to the Jofa line, I would at least juggle up lines 2-4.
I'm okay with that.
Because the Sissons-Bonino-Watson line has not been what it was
correct.
In the playoffs last year.
That's right.
The second line with Granlund, Turris, and Smith, I get it that two of those three are responsible for game winners in this series so far. Smith scored the game winner without Turris and Granlund on the same line in Game 2 overtime.
So it wasn't really the line.
It wasn't really the line.
Right.
It was the player.
Right.
And then Granlund's goal Monday night of him just, I don't know. I don't even know what the word is I want to say.
Well,
just,
Chris Mason said it wasn't fluky, but everyone else is saying it's fluky.
Just lofting it towards the net, and it somehow eludes Ben Bishop.
Good things happen. That's where that cliche comes from, everybody. Good things happen.
I don't know if you put Yarncroke, Sissons, and Smith back together. That line worked really well in the middle of March when you turned the second half of that season around when you know what hit the fan in Anaheim. Peter Laviolette put that line together, and that line was effective.
Great. Give it a shot.
Why not?
But just don't touch, for the love of the hockey gods, don't touch the top line. Because we've seen over and over and over again, it doesn't work as well as when they're together.
What's the definition of insanity? Trying the same thing over and
correct.
Over and over and over again and expecting different results?
And unfortunately, you can make that argument. That would apply to both of these theories.
Well, that would also apply.
Either keeping them together for over and over and over again or breaking them up over and over and over again.
I mean, that would also apply to the power play, but
that's
a lost cause at this point
right.
as well.
We've talked about that.
So, Jeremy K. Gover, thank you as always for joining us here on Preds Insiders in studio.
Got through an hour, Porth.
We
right
came
at the
up
top,
with,
we were talking about how we're speechless. Thank you.
Thank you,
thank
Calvin
you very
Smith.
Much. It's a live,
yes.
it's a live audience. Thank
yes.
you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank
standing
you.
Ovation.
We got through it, though, is my point. We talked about how we're going to be speechless 10 minutes in, I think. We had 50 minutes to fill, and I think we did that. With the help of the callers, of course.
Carolina's up 1-0 after 1. Jets Blues at 7:30. Gover, fun as always.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me in.
For Gover, I'm Ryan Porth. You've been listening to Preds Insiders. We will be back at it tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Adam Vingan of The Athletic will be joining me in studio right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.